It's Classical Spotlight, and coming up, a wonderful concert with the Heart of Texas Concert Band Tuesday evening at 7:30. In the studios is their founder and director, Mark Rogers. Good afternoon.
Well, I'm so happy to be with you, John.
Well, it's a neat concert. I know we are all looking forward to the Brahms Festival and the majority of the events in January and February, but you guys are getting a head start here. Tell us a little bit about Brahms First for band.
For a wind band. Well, one reason that we're getting an early start on it, so many things about the schedule with the Heart of Texas Concert Band revolves around the things that are going on in the lives of our musicians. And this is the time of the year when so many of our musicians have got to take a leave of absence from us because they're involved with football band or something like that. So this is the time that I have set aside for us, and we've done it this year and last year, for us to take a great big hunk of a piece of orchestral music. And one of those pieces that has been, in this case, arranged for band or is available for band, and given my players the opportunity to come into contact with something which is one of those, as we put it, one of the monuments of Western civilization. Last year at this time, we played Dvorak's Ninth Symphony, which I'm pleased to say that there are wonderful transcriptions of all four movements. I shouldn't claim too much credit for that because I'm the one who did the second and third movements of what we did last year. But in the case of the Brahms First Symphony, the late conductor of the University of Illinois Symphonic Band, Mark Hinesley, did transcriptions of all four movements of the Brahms. And we're happy to do that. And that sort of leads me to the idea that one of the things which has changed so much in the days since when Brahms wrote this piece, because he could, of course, never imagined a culture as affluent as ours is, where there can be communities large and small that can support major symphony orchestras. This is not our performance, and the performance of the San Antonio Symphony are not the only performances of the Brahms First Symphony. 2 weeks ago, I played this same piece in Victoria with the Victoria Symphony, and later on this spring, I'll be playing it again with the Corpus Christi Symphony. So this is one of no less than four performances of this symphony that I will participate in some way, shape, form, or fashion before the end of this concert season. But I think it's also worth noticing that the art of transcription was so much bigger a facet in music then as it is now. Some people know that the Brahms Hungarian dances were originally written for piano four hands, but nowadays the only way we ever hear these pieces is in their orchestral garb. But Brahms didn't do any of those orchestrations. And similarly, the Dvorak Slavonic dances started out as piano four hands, and some of those he orchestrated, and they became concert pieces. Well, it also went the other way as well. There are wonderful stories concerning the members of the Second Viennese School, Anton Webern and Schoenberg and Berg, who, as a fundraiser for their society for the private performance of music, commissioned each other to do arrangements of Johann Strauss waltzes to be performed by little salon orchestras. And it's well known that every time Brahms went out to have a bite to eat at some nice theater or some nice restaurant, there would be some small ensemble that would be over in the corner playing some of the music that was very familiar to him, and very often it was arrangements of some of his large orchestral pieces. And this was the way when people who couldn't afford to go to orchestral concerts, or they lived out in the sticks and it was too hard to get to these places, they would have the chance to hear these pieces. And in many instances, I think it sort of depends on how great the orchestrator was. In the case of some of the people to whose music a lot of the interest is built up in the orchestral texture, perhaps it's more difficult to make a band sound good on these pieces than it is in the case with Brahms. It might be very difficult to do to take something by Ravel, which is all about orchestral tissue and atmospheric sounds, and make it work for band. But in the case of the Brahms, it's a piece that you can almost see that Brahms, because he composed at the piano, what's important about this piece is the counterpoint and the weights of the various lines one against another. And that leads me thinking about Percy Grainger, who said, "You can do just about anything you want to with my music, so long as you maintain the balances and you play all the notes." And I think Brahms might be very happy with what we're going to be doing with this piece.
It's funny, Brahms, I sometimes looked at as a very conservative sort of guy, and I think Schoenberg, as you were talking about, doing all these transcriptions, mm-hmm. looked at him as sort of a futurist. I mean, he transcribed the piano quartet into full orchestra,
exactly.
And whatnot. So,
and I think it's really tragic that because we live in a day and age where we're so hung up on performing pieces exactly as they were written, that the Brahms Fifth Symphony, which is that transcription for gigantic orchestra of the Gypsy Quartet, so seldom gets performed nowadays. It's one of those things that you only hear it on classical radio, you know, because there are recordings that have been made of it. But have you ever seen anyone who's ever done a live performance of it? I haven't.
Very few, yeah.
But I would love it, because, once again, there's so much Brahms that we don't know. I would just love it if there were orchestral arrangements of some of the Liebeslieder waltzes, because that's charming. It's wonderful music. And if you don't happen to be in a place where there's a really strong tradition of vocal music, you're never going to hear those pieces. And if you are a big fan of orchestra music but not necessarily a big fan of chamber music, then you may not know the piano quartet. And to hear it being played by a full orchestra is like, wow, this is a great piece of music. And the person next to you says, yeah, it's really great in the original version too. You should hear it sometime.
There is that sort of spice. I mean, he had such a colorful upbringing in Hamburg.
Yes.
And these sort of things that were going along. And it's interesting. Liszt had these wonderful sort of rhapsodies. Brahms has these dances. Dvorak mm-hmm. had the his, you know, from the publisher. They were so successful.
That's right.
You know, that it went around. Is it fun to see the band coping with violin lines and having these different things that come around? And it's got to be a good experience for the students and teachers that are performers, as well as yourself, I bet.
Yes. For me, you know, there's only so much growth that you can do without tackling really important, significant pieces of music. And as much as I like to think that I have very eclectic tastes, and I'm very happy to do a concert that will be all music of Percy Grainger or music of Sousa or music of a certain time period or something like that, I know that the reason a great composer like von Karajan could have recorded the Brahms symphonies as a cycle multiple times in their lifetime is because they've grown. And the music itself stays the same, but as you, the conductor, mature, then you see things that were there all the time, but you were not mature enough to see them. And for me, it's wonderful not only to be on the other side of the stick, playing the piece, and then turning around to be in front of it to see and experience the piece from all these different angles. Now, for us, our biggest challenge is that the balances work so that they're almost automatic when you hire an orchestra and you have the proper proportion of winds to brass and proper proportion of first violins to seconds. And we're always having to fiddle to try to say, no, the line that you're playing there is a cello line and you need to play it louder, or the line you have there is a cello line, you need to play it softer, because for some reason the cello players seem to have a sixth sense of where they fit into the texture when they're playing it with an orchestra. And we have to go back and revisit those issues in rehearsal and say, we've got to make these things work, because we've got to make sure and guide the audience's ear to hear that which is important.
Well, it's going to be an exciting event. You guys are at Northeast Lakeview College.
Right.
They're at the Performing Arts Center, and that'll be a nice space for you guys to have this great C minor mm-hmm.
yes.
Sound for it.
And as this is the Tuesday before the weekend, which has Veterans Day on it, we're also, the first half of the concert, we should mention as well, we're going to be playing Jim Barnes's The Long Gray Line, which is a piece he wrote in honor of West Point and the endless supply of Army officers wearing gray, which have kept our country safe for so many years. And a piece by Vaclav Nelibel, his symphonic movement. And just because we want to end the first half with kind of a little bit of a flourish, we'll be playing The Rite of the Valkyries from Die Walküre of Wagner.
Oh, very fun. Something for the Brahms fans, something for the Wagner fans.
That's right.
Well, Mark, we're looking forward to it. Folks can find out more at heartoftexasconcertband.com, right?
That's right.
And it's free, but of course, having music and instruments and whatnot, donations are accepted.
Oh, yes, donations are always gladly accepted.
Oh, cool. Well, it's great, and we hope you'll stop in again.
Thank you so much, John.